This is Tim O'Brien with O'Reilly Media.
Personal Democracy Forum 2008, talking to the Sun Life Foundation. It seems like I'm talking to all of the Sun Life Foundation. Who wants to go first?
I'm Gabriella Schneider. I'm Sunlight's Communications Director.
I'm Josh Rulli. I'm a developer with Sunlight Labs.
I'm Greg Allen. I'm the Chief Data Architect at Sunlight Labs.
My name's John Wunderlich. I'm Program Director. I work on the advocacy and congressional aspects.
What is it that you guys do?
In a nutshell, we create greater transparency and public accessibility to the work of Congress. We put information online so that citizens can know who are their lawmakers, what bills are they introducing, how are they voting, what are the influences that affect them and their decision-making, who's contributing to them. And we are a grant-making nonprofit based in D.C. We were founded 2 years ago. And we give out grants to other organizations like the Center for Responsive Politics. Most people might know them from their website, Open Secrets, to Fed Spending. We help fund the creation of FedSpending.org, which is a project of the OMB Watch, which put all government grants and contracts online for the first time. And they were so successful and inspired government to follow suit and create their own website, USAspending.gov, which uses licensing from FedSpending.org.
Okay, so in terms of working with Congress, are there specific members of Congress that you've worked with?
We have really good relationships with a lot of members of Congress. Part of my work on the Open House project was inspired by blogging that happened online, but also because Speaker Pelosi's staff, right after the 2006 elections, were very passionate about the sort of things that were happening online, and finding out more about what the blogging community would like to see from the House of Representatives as far as information access. So everything that Sunlight does involves leveraging the power of the internet and also leveraging the new communities that exist there. And so a lot of our work involves the communities of bloggers and technologists that exist now and are connecting online, and also a community of staff and lawmakers that are increasingly using technology.
There's a bill sponsored by Obama and Coburn. Did that have any effect on what the Sunlight Foundation does?
Absolutely. It released a lot more data and ended up in the creation of the
The Sunlight Foundation and the community around the Sunlight Foundation, or the community that which Sunlight is a part, actually was very instrumental in getting that bill passed. We were a number of people in the transparency community organizations were very excited about that type of bill, because it was a bill to make the information that was published. It was a bill to the Federal Accountability and Transparency Act that Coburn Obama sponsored, was a bill to make information that was already available available in a much more user-friendly format as an end user searchable website. The bill actually had a secret hold placed on it by a senator. And the community at large and Sunlight participated in an effort to call a call was put out on the web to call every member of the Senate, their office, and find out who had placed the secret hold on the bill.
Now, that was Ted Stevens of Alaska?
It turned out that it was Ted Stevens of Alaska who had placed the secret hold on the Federal Accountability and Transparency Act, and because he was also the sponsor of a $200 million earmark the year before for the Bridge to Nowhere, he was kind of caught with his pants down. He more or less had to capitulate, and so it's an interesting story in that the year before we were collaborating with a number of organizations, from the Heritage Foundation to Porkbusters to taxpayers, to put up information about earmarks.
We actually
Taxpayers for Common Sense, where we were putting information up online about earmarks, and then. This bill came down the line, and one of the biggest earmarkers had placed a secret hold on that bill. And it was really a community effort that ended up releasing that secret hold. And it's a huge impact, because on the FedSpending.org site that Gabriella mentioned, since its inception, there have been well over 6 million, probably 8 million or more, 8 million searches for federal contracts and grants. So there's clearly a lot of pent-up demand by the community at large for this information.
Respond to the following. A tool like this can be used by a member of the general public to find out who's sort of in bed with a corporation, but it can also be used by a corporate lobbyist to find out who's the most compliant, who wants to reply to that.
I would say that any disclosure system, it should be viewed as a blunt tool and carefully designed so that it doesn't have unintended consequences, like ranking the most effective lobbyists and just creating a new sort of market. So any time that you implement new disclosure requirements, it's important to think through the implications. But I think what's really clear from all of our work on congressional disclosure is that more disclosure is better, even though there are some unintended consequences to be aware of.
I concur with my colleague John Wunderlich that just like in open source, more transparency enables better uses. But you want to be able to allow everyone to participate. Part of our right as citizens is the right to petition our government, and that includes lobbying. We are not opposed to lobbying or lobbyists. We are opposed to the lack of disclosure around those activities.
Okay, so one question I had for you guys, it's very technical, is how do you get the data from Congress? There's something called Thomas. Is it in XML?
We get the data through a variety of means, and there's a growing community. There was as you may know that there was an interesting meeting that was hosted at O'Reilly in Sebastopol in December of 2007 that Carl Malamud from publicresource.org put together around open government data and how to make it more available. So we do get a lot of data from Thomas. We get it from GAO. We get it from the GPO. The government printing offices, the government printing office. We scrape it from different sites, and we get it, and we also access some of the data via other parties like GovTrack.us that get the data, scrape it, and make it available in a friendlier XML format. But we did a very interesting project just recently that we launched that I think Josh should tell you about and how we got the data for that.
Words.
Well, two projects. We had two small projects, Capital Words and Fortune 535, which kind of describe the range of data that's available.
So CapitalWords.org, it's capital T-O-L, it's basically a microsite where we show the top word of the day or the top word used in Congress for any given day. The data story for that is very interesting. We have a project called Lewis, which is lewisdb.org. For that, we actually go and scrape much of the federal government. In this particular case, we scrape the congressional record from GPO. From the Lewis API, we actually grab counts of each word for each day and then display it on a website. So if you go to the website, you'll see oil. I believe yesterday's word was energy. And there's also a calendar view to where you can, and it goes back to January of 2000 to where you can see trends in words over time. So
what was the most popular word, say, in Congress right after the 9/11 attacks?
On November 12th, it was nation. On November 13th, it was terrorist. And on November 14th, it was war.
Josh has also worked on another project which describes some of the data that's very difficult to get. The United States government has a tradition of making information available. It also has a tradition of making it available through third parties or in formats that are hard to use. So we have another project which provided easier access to provided a way of looking at the personal finances of members of Congress, and it is legislated that members of Congress actually have to file biannual or annual financial disclosure documents that reveal what their financial interests might be.
Well, one thing that we learned when we created Fortune 535, which is fortune535.sunlightprojects.org, is that lawmakers...
And that's a play on Fortune 500. That's just the number of members in Congress.
That's correct. Number of members of Congress. We found that the disclosure forms that lawmakers file annually, they're only supposed to file their assets and liabilities in broad ranges, and these ranges changed over years. So originally, we went into the basement of the Library of Congress and got the first filings that all members of Congress filed going back to 1978, and because we wanted to compare from when they first started, for those who are still in tenure, to where they are now. And we found that, well, they report in ranges. There are a lot of things they don't have to report. So the disclosure system is severely flawed. And we created the site to visualize the data about their assets to compare it to that of the average American, but also to highlight the need for stronger disclosure requirements, which we all also spelled out on a website that we were very happy that Tim O'Reilly pointed out at the Web 2.0 Expo called publicmarkup.org. We decided we wanted to create model transparency legislation that we would take to members of Congress and get their support on. But instead of just doing it the old-fashioned way, we thought, well, we're Sunlight, so we're going to put it online. And we posted our legislation online in such a way, we used Django, in such a way that anyone could comment on either the entire bill, which had several titles and many sections, or section by section. We're right now redrafting our model bill based on the feedback we got, and we received over 120 comments for something that's really a little bit, for me, wonky, very detailed, looking at, but really important. So how to improve the financial disclosure system, how to improve how we know, Greg mentioned disclosure of lobbyists. We're not against lobbyists, but we think it's the internet. Everyone's got a PDA. They can tell us as soon as they leave their meeting, I met with so-and-so, we discussed this. We don't need to know 6 months after the fact. We need to know on a daily basis. We have the technology to do it. We need to change the culture of Congress to make it happen.
So you would say that we need to know who's going into the White House every single day, who's going into every congressional office every single day?
I think the public wants to know that.
Did you work with Lawrence Lessig on how they selected?
Well, we did not. I mean, he started Change Congress on his own. We were not involved in it. We certainly support. We're supportive of transparency, and
we love the fact that Lessig is on board with our mission, and we're supportive of Change Congress. We think that. The tide is turning. More and more people are seeing that they might have worked on specific issues and how that's impacted by legislation. But I think everyone, in fact, what I heard today and yesterday, the Personal Democracy Forum, is we need to get to the root cause. And the root cause is not necessarily banning something like earmarks, but it's letting the public know, this is your tax money. Do you want to know how members of Congress are allocating that? Are they spending money on a bridge to nowhere, or are they giving money for a university to do health research?
Yeah, I mean, Larry's stuff is fabulous, and I think his presentation, his ability to distill down what things might be related to each other, and our desire at Sunlight to help people understand what things are related and create more disclosure of that information. You want to be able to know, we want to be able to see if there is money that's coming from a particular interest group or a particular industry that is influencing decisions that members are making. It's not wrong for them to lobby or to have an agenda, but people should understand, but it should be transparent for everyone regarding that in that type of engagement, and if that engagement is done through rational argument or it's just done through spreading greenbacks around.
I love the story about how Lessig came to be involved in the congressional reform movement. I think it's a familiar plot arc that at least certainly us at Sunlight, all of us having our different backgrounds and ending up at this foundation. A lot of people are involved in different kinds of advocacy who have the different issue that they're interested in, come to realize that transparency and technology in government are the fundamental thing that's going to enable a lot of those other reforms to happen. So the fact that he approached congressional transparency through the intellectual property world that he was working in, that was very legal and very academic, is very reassuring to me, because I think we all have similar stories about how we came to be interested in congressional transparency.
Are there any other efforts going on in the other branches of government, like the executive branch and the judicial branch?
the judicial branch is the one that's probably lacking the most, because the interest in judicial affairs is largely limited to legal professionals who rely on for-pay services to get their information. I know that Carl Malamud, that Greg mentioned before, is doing a lot of work on digitizing case law and other really excellent projects about that. And at Cornell, their Legal Information Institute is also putting a lot of legal information online and discovering, much like we have, that there's a demand for legal information that exists outside the legal profession that can afford Lexis subscriptions. So there's a lot of similar work to be done both in the legal world and the judicial branch, and also in the executive branch, with all the conversations that are really starting to be considered as we think about the next presidencies.
Yeah, I mean, there are wonderful initiatives all over the place. There are initiatives coming from, I mean, government is big. There are a lot of agencies. There's a lot of groups. Sheila Campbell, who is here today talking about a group she heads up.
The GSA?
The GSA.
Webcontent.gov.
Webcontent.gov, which is really a site. It's a site and it's a community of webmasters within the federal government. So, and they are trying to provide information to people. They are part of their mission of the agencies. Are to serve people, you know, help them with their Social Security. And we saw one of the sites that she demonstrated today was the TSA site, talking, because there was a big demand to understand what was happening with airport security. But at the same time, anything that happens in government, any type of legislative process, any type of judicial process, any type of executive branch process has a life cycle. So the question is who gets to find out what's happening in that life cycle when? You know, is everybody in the country, we would not tolerate certain groups knowing what the Fed was going to, how the Fed was going to move on a monetary decision or an interest rate prior to the whole market knowing what that decision would be. And yet, in the other branches of government, in the executive branch and in the congressional branch, we tolerate people being able to purchase access to earlier points in the life cycle, and be in the life cycle in order to understand, or in order to,
influence?
Well, influence, or simply hedge. What they hedge their bets of what the end of that life cycle process is going to be. Are there groups that have an inside track on what kind of decisions are going to be made about pharmaceuticals, and that they can hedge their economic decisions and bets around that? Or does everybody find out at the same time?
How do you balance transparency and secrecy?
Oh, we can't talk about that.
So a lot of the lines around what should be secret and what shouldn't be secret are very well established, but really contentious, because it's always being tugged on. There's always the risk that government employees or legislators are going to use secrecy to hide either their misdeeds or because of some conflict of interest. So overall, the lines, like the line about what committee hearings should be public and which ones shouldn't be public, they're really well established. No one denies that commercial secrets, private information, or national security issues should be secret. The question is that line being appropriately held, and is the oversight that is supposed to define that line working properly?
And what's theoretically available? Is that made meaningfully available?
If everything's transparent immediately, do you worry that people are going to start making things privileged?
What do you mean?
Say, if I'm in Congress and I'm in a committee hearing, and I don't want people to hear what I'm saying because it's going out through the Sunlight Foundation, do you worry that people are going to start misusing secrecy like we did in the lead-up to the war?
I think that's a really valid concern. One of the objections to our idea about members should post the requests that they've made for earmarks. The objection that I've heard frequently is that if, as a member office, we start to disclose every earmark request, we'll just request everything, and then on the side, secretly, go to the Appropriations Committee and say, these are the real requests, but we wanted to submit all of them because it's good for us as an office to get reelected. So with every new disclosure requirement, there are certainly, you know, just scurrying back into the shadows, you know, new lines of influence that we have to pay attention to. So I think that's certainly a concern.
I think a quality disclosure regime or protocol reinforces good behavior on participants in the same way that quality open source licenses or quality standards reinforce positive behavior and benefits for the whole community. I think we have not seen a lot of examples within the open source community where, in order to hide things, people are making new things proprietary. They've always had the ability to make things proprietary. What we're finding out is that proprietary cannot compete with open source and sharing and standardize.
If you're interested in some more of the ethics around transparency requirements, a great place to look is the Harvard Transparency Policy Project, and they've released a series of white papers and also several books studying, especially in economic context, what the specific effects are of different kinds of transparency requirements in a very rigorous, enlightening way. So that's a valuable place to look for it.
The other thing is we're hoping to create a public expectation that information about government isn't secret. So people will start to think, well, I thought earmarks were online. I thought I could go to my member of Congress's official website and see what earmarks she is requesting. I thought I could see what her daily schedule is. Who is she meeting with? So if we're trying to help encourage Congress to do that and also let citizens and bloggers know they should be expecting this sort of information, so if they start to see a dearth of it, they'll know to be asking the questions and demanding that information.
Another thing that's only just starting to happen is that members of Congress are starting to realize that open, public, transparent advocacy processes are actually valuable to them. And they're always looking for attention, they're always looking for press mentions, they want to be reelected. So the fact that the internet allows them to reach so many people so cheaply, they're only starting to understand the way that political rewards might work in a networked congressional sphere. And as they start to realize that more, we're going to see a lot more exciting things happening online from members of Congress and from administrators in government.
If you're a technical person, say you're a developer, and you have a good idea for an algorithm or some sort of analysis of the data, is there a place in the Sunlight Foundation for you to show up and say, I've got an idea?
Sure. I mean, there's lots of places to go. We have a place. We're on Facebook. We're easy to email. Any email that's sent to, what's our best email address?
There's a form on our site, but info@sunlightfoundation.com.
So info@sunlightfoundation.com would easily route people to those of us in the labs. We also have a web form for people to submit for grants between $500 and $5,000, which we call Sunlight Transparency Grants, which we decide on a rolling basis. Yes?
Mini grants.
We also have a very active email list. If you go to theopenhouseproject.com, there's a link to it's a Google group called the Open House Project Google group. And it's a really active email list of web developers and congressional staff and bloggers and media figures all talking about political information and what they'd like to see and the ethics behind it and all those questions.
We're really easy to find. I mean, you Google any of us. You Google our names. You Google... If you can't figure out how to get in touch with us, you probably...
Then you can write to me, G. Schneider, S-C-H-N-E-I-D-E-R @sunlightfoundation.com.
Or you can follow any of these people on Twitter. I'll put your Twitter names online.
You can just Twitter us, just whatever. Right, exactly.
Wired just released Reddit as an open source application. They did it last week. You can go get the source. Do you guys have any plans to do anything similar?
Oh, a lot of our code already is open source. All of our grantees, the general rule is that any grant that we give is for open source development, and that which isn't open source yet is really because we haven't gotten around to just cleaning it up and putting it up on Google Code or some other place. But one of our grantees, opencongress.org, they're Ruby on Rails, and their site is completely open source, and it has already been taken. It was taken last year in 2007, and someone created OpenMaths. SunLife.org, which covered the Massachusetts state legislation with it. So we are very much in favor of it. And I think that things have just, there's been such a pent-up demand to do things, we've just been running flat out in the labs and doing different projects and working with grantees. But I think that one of our big goals for the rest of 2008 is to have more of a developer community. So we'd really love to see other developers and coming in and asking and helping us with patches and helping us with development. There's another project that we're doing, watchdog.net. Which has a call for developers out that Aaron Schwartz is doing, and that's already open source as well as the data. And you asked about licenses. Most of our stuff is GPL or MIT license, I think for the most part.
He's nodding yes.
I GPL, from what I know.
And is that for any reason? Why do you choose GPL?
I think that the main reason for choosing GPL would be that it's very common, people are familiar with it, and it has the reciprocity agreement, so that if people were taking with it, that their contributions would be made available back to everybody else. I think that that's the primary reason, but I think a lot of people these days are doing the MIT license, and I think that we might have something that's released under that, but you know, our principal concern would be reciprocity, more than a particular type of use that people were putting things to.
Do you do any work with the Mozilla Foundation? Do you work with Frank Hecker?
I was just talking to Frank today. I'm really, really excited about Firefox 3.0. I think it's really fabulous. I guess, you know, give them a free plug. I was learning a little bit more from Frank Hecker of what they're thinking of doing with Thunderbird, and I think that's very exciting. We would love to do some more with the browser. And if there are any people out there who are Zool developers who want to help us do plugins, we'd love to hear from them. And that would be great. And so we've talked with Frank, and I think that it's would love to have more help so that we could do things.
Sheila Campbell, in the plenary session, I believe, loaded up Southwest Airlines and said she wishes more government sites could be like Southwest Airlines. I'm just going to go around the circle. If one of you could choose a site that you want the government to be more like, just let me know what it is.
OpenCongress.org.
No, I'd like the government to be more like Google and Amazon. You know, and I'd certainly, from a developer perspective, I would certainly want the government to be more like Google, Amazon. I'd certainly want them to be more like the web services that Amazon provides.
So you don't want the government to be like a low-fare airline without seat assignments?
you know, I would happily work with a government without seat assignments, because I think that that's the democratic process, and I think all of us should have the same access, all of us have the same opportunity to get in the A, B, or C gate to talk to our representatives. And I think at the same time, I don't need that. If I can get on-time service delivered for an affordable price, I'd be extremely happy with that from our government.
If it's cheap and gets us there safely, then excellent.
I'd just like to add, I also would love to see government and particular lawmakers and agency officials and FCC commissioners to have an intimate conversation that the whole world can see on Twitter. There are some lawmakers who are ahead of the curve, who are, I think, engaging people directly, having public conversations, having debates on the floor with one another that aren't just prepared speeches. So I'd like the intimacy of web applications like Twitter in terms of communicating directly with my members of Congress.
Seems like what you're doing is challenging entrenched power. Are you ever worried that, you know, there's a conference of oil and tobacco executives sitting around finding ways to make what you do less possible?
I think about that a lot in terms of the Congressional Information Services, the industry of information that's grown up around Congress. But I think the improvements that we're making are so incremental that it's the threat is not immediate to them. And so what we're doing is applying a constructive pressure that says to them, you need to step up your game. And if you want people to continue being paid subscribers, then you have to add more than you're already doing, because that information that you're giving lobbyists soon is going to be available to everyone.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Thanks, Tim.